So I thought I would start the new year by having a look at Dogen and Genjo Koan. We recited or chanted the first part of it tonight. So if you want to, you can
I
follow
would like to,
along.
yeah.
It's page 25 in the liturgy book. I think it's a slightly different translation than this one. This is from Moon in a Dewdrop by Kaz Ta-Nehisi, but they're close enough. So first, a few words about Dogen. Dogen was Japanese. He was born in the year 1200, so his life was basically the first part of the 13th century. And when he was, his parents were in the court of the emperor, so they were well-to-do. But when he was 3 years old, his father died. And when he was eight, his mother died. So he was left an orphan, and he had the opportunity to follow in his father's footsteps and also be part of the court, but he chose not to. He was so gripped by this matter of life and death that had come right in directly into his life that he decided to train at a Buddhist monastery instead, and was ordained when he was 13. And so he studied at a monastery for a long time. But when he had become a young man, he felt as though he still had not had his questions answered. There was still something deeply concerning him. His great question was, why, if we are already perfect as we are, already enlightened, why do we have to practice so hard? And no one that he met in Japan could answer to his satisfaction. And so he decided to undertake the perilous journey across the ocean to China. He had heard that there were much better teachers there, so he thought he would go and see who he could find. And so he did. He crossed to China and spent some years there and wandered about at first until he found a teacher who he felt was the right one for him to work with, and stayed there for several years working with this teacher, Rujin. Until one day, let's see if I can find a description here. It says, in his later writings, there's only one short reference to the moment of his realization. He writes, "I was able to enact this face-to-face transmission by dropping away body and mind, and I have established this transmission in Japan." So at this point, he felt that his deep question had been resolved, and he went back to Japan and set up a monastery there. And apparently, Japanese Buddhism was in a bit of a state of disrepair and was full of superstition and empty ritual, and so he set about changing all of that at his monastery. And he had many, many rules for every little thing: rules about how to brush your teeth, rules about how to use the toilet, rules about how to get dressed, everything, so that every moment of the day counted as practice. And this really set the stage for Japanese Zen that was to come after him. So it was very influential. And his writings are, he wrote quite a bit. And his writings are unusual in that they can't really be grasped if you're only using the analytical mind. He's speaking from somewhere else and writing from somewhere else. So we all struggle as we read it. There's a Dogen discussion group at Greater Boston Zen Center, and they call it their Dogen support group because it's so daunting to read Dogen. But we're going to take a look at the Genjo Koan at any rate and see what we can do with it. Genjo Koan, in my book, it's translated as actualizing the fundamental point, the fundamental point being truth. Genjo Koan I've also heard translated as the koan of everyday life, our life as a koan, as our practice. And that would be where we actualize truth. There isn't anywhere else to do it. And an important point here is that it's not enough simply to gain wisdom or to have some insight into what this truth is. We must actualize it in our lives. It needs to come forth as activity and to as interaction in the world. Else, what good is it? It doesn't mean anything. So, actualizing the fundamental point. And I'll read this first paragraph, or I guess it's first section, it's marked as number one here, and then we can go back and dissect it a bit. As all things are Buddha Dharma, there is delusion and realization, practice and birth and death, and there are Buddhas and sentient beings. As the myriad things are without an abiding self, there is no delusion, no realization, no Buddha, no sentient being, no birth and death. The Buddha way is basically leaping clear of the many and the one. Thus, there are birth and death, delusion and realization, sentient beings and Buddhas. Yet in attachment, blossoms fall, and in aversion, weeds spread. So here he's gone back and forth between making an affirmation. There is delusion and realization, practice, birth and death, and then negating that. There is not. No delusion, no realization, no Buddha. And then coming back again and affirming it, but with a slight twist. Again, there are birth and death, delusion and realization. So let's look at each one of these a little more closely. As all things are Buddha Dharma, there is delusion and realization, practice and birth and death, and there are Buddhas and sentient beings. So this world that we live in, this world of form that he's pointing to, does exist. These things are actual. They are Buddha Dharma. They are truth. It's not that the truth resides somewhere else, that the real world is somewhere else. No, it's right here. And it includes these, the world of form is, as we grasp it with our thinking mind, is a place of polar opposites. It's how we make sense of the world around us by dividing it up into this and that. And so he goes through some of these, delusion and realization. It's not that realization is somewhere else. It's right here in the same place as delusion. And he includes practice, because that was his question, right? Why do we have to practice so hard if there is realization, if we are already whole and complete? And he's saying in this world, there is practice. This is, as all things are Buddha Dharma, also there is practice. And birth and death, and Buddhas and sentient beings. So he's acknowledging all of these things that, are part of our everyday life. We could hardly deny them. And then he goes on to say, as the myriad things are without an abiding self, there is no delusion, no realization, no Buddha, no sentient being, no birth and death. So he's turning it around. Dogen never sits in one place for long. Where he was just talking about the world of form, now he's turned it to the other face. This empty world where there's no abiding anything, the myriad things without an abiding self. And of course, we recognize this, even though it's not how we see it in our daily lives. When we're so immersed in the world of form, the way we're used to approaching our lives. Nevertheless, we can't deny that everything changes all around us, that we ourselves change, that everyone we know, everyone on the earth right now, will be dead in 100 years. So nothing with an abiding self. And since this is so, since there are no firm points in this real world, nothing to be delineated as delusion or realization, nothing to be firmly defined as Buddha or sentient being, as birth or death, this boundaryless oneness. And yet he says, the Buddha way is basically leaping clear of the many and the one. It's not to be stuck in either one of these. Yes, there's this way of looking at it. Yes, it has this other face. And yet, to leap clear of even those definitions, not to be stuck in there's this and there's that, because here again is the mind's way of parsing things into opposites, form and absolute. But really, we're just talking about this. How do you divide it up? And so we leap clear of the many and the one. And so in this leaping clear, there's room for everything. There's room for birth and death. There's room for delusion and realization, for sentient beings and Buddhas. And yet, in attachment, blossoms fall, and in aversion, weeds spread. So even though there's this leaping clear, even though there's this way of looking at our life that is boundaryless and one, even so, suffering can arise. Mm-hmm. The three poisons of, we say that they are the source of suffering, attachment, aversion, and ignorance. Ignorance is sometimes also translated as certainty. And so in the midst of all this leaping clear, still when there's attachment can arise. And when there's attachment, blossoms fall. And when there's aversion, I don't like this, pushing it away, weeds spread. So at the second paragraph, or section, to carry yourself forward and experience myriad things is delusion. That myriad things come forth and experience themselves is awakening. Those who have great realization of delusion are Buddhas. Those who are greatly deluded about realization are sentient beings. Further, there are those who continue realizing beyond realization, who are in delusion throughout delusion. When Buddhas are truly Buddhas, they do not necessarily notice that they are Buddhas. However, they are actualized Buddhas who go on actualizing Buddhas. So coming back to this first part, to carry yourself forward and experience myriad things is delusion. That myriad things come forth and experience themselves is awakening. So I was talking with someone the other night who said she was having difficulties with doing Zazen because she couldn't seem to get her mind to calm down. Mm-hmm. This is why she was sitting. She wanted it to be calm, but she couldn't seem to get it there. And what was she doing wrong? We smile because we're familiar with this. Yeah. And yet, I don't know about you, but I get hooked by it again and again to come to this cushion with an agenda, with this idea of, I don't like the way things are now. I want them to be that way. My mind is racing. I want it to be calm. I feel filled with delusion. I want to be clear, you know. And so the game plan to get there, attachment to what's there and the aversion for what's here, you know, the source of suffering, right? Mm-hmm. And it's endlessly interesting to me how all of this can be played out in this little 3-foot square as we sit. The whole way that we meet our lives is manifested in this sitting upright, right here for us to see. And so this is carrying ourselves forward and experiencing myriad things. I want this of from over there. And already we're separate, right? There's myself and there's everything else. And then there's how I get to everything else. So already delusion. And so when we sit, sometimes we have, we find the way to put all that down and let go of the doing. Find a different way to allow life to actualize through us. And this is allowing the myriad things to come forth and experience themselves. Who can say who's experiencing what at such a time? Even the myriad things is perhaps saying too much. Simply this, experiencing this. Those who have great realization of delusion are Buddhas. Those who are greatly deluded about realization are sentient beings. Great realization of delusion, Buddhas. So not going off to some other realm where there is no delusion, but right in the midst of it, that is where realization is. They are not two different things. I have a quote that I keep on my desk at work, and I just read it because I think it's relevant. This is also Dogen, so he's consistent anyway. When we realize the way, we do not realize with something else. We realize only with sounds and colors. When we are deluded, we are not deluded with something else. We are deluded only with sounds and colors. A deluded person and an enlightened person at the same time use one boat, and each is not obstructed. It's not like they are in the same world, right? It's not that the experiences are different or that the place is different. It's great realization of delusion, of this very world as it is. This is Buddhahood. And those who are greatly deluded about realization are sentient beings. When we think we must get something, when we think that there's something we're lacking. Great delusion. And this puts us back into the world of sentient beings. Of course, they're the same world, the same boat, right? So what is the difference? Further, there are those who continue realizing beyond realization, who are in delusion, throughout delusion. There's a koan about, I forget exactly how it goes, but the monk asks the teacher, he's asking him about the hell realms. And the teacher says that he would be the first one to enter the hell realms. And the student asks, why? And he said, how else will I help? In delusion, throughout delusion, recognizing that delusion arises, that this is what we work with, not something else, somewhere else. This is the stuff of our life. And realizing beyond realization, it's not that we get some experience, some kensho, some satori, an awakening, and then we're done, you know. Got it. Here's my certificate. There. Yeah. Yeah. The practice continues. Mm-hmm. Dogen said one of his big things was that practice is enlightenment. Enlightenment is practice. They're not separate. Mm-hmm. So the very act of sitting in this posture, of taking on this intention, is evidence of our already enlightened nature. Of course, we may not recognize it as such, and that makes all the difference. But nevertheless, we wouldn't be called to this if we were not already of this stuff. And so when Buddhas are truly Buddhas, they do not necessarily notice that they are Buddhas. However, they are actualized Buddhas who go on actualizing Buddhas. So I wonder, what would it mean if a Buddha did realize that he was a Buddha? Ah, oh, I've got it now.
Right.
Even to separate oneself out. I've got it. Now I'm a Buddha. You all, too bad. I think that it's in those moments when we are completely participating in our lives, fully actualizing the fundamental point. This is realizing beyond realizing. This is Buddhas being truly Buddhas, even though they don't necessarily notice that they're Buddhas. And when we talk about Buddhas, we're not talking about other people or only Roshis or, you know, senior students or whatever. All myriad beings manifesting full and complete as they are, as we are.
Mm-hmm.